Hi, I'm Sam Dover. This is City Road, produced out of the 2SER studios in Sydney and coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network.
The COVID-19 pandemic has provided a hopefully once-in-a-generation opportunity to fix the structural and systemic problems of housing that have always been here in Australia.
Think that a housing crisis is an individual person's problem, and I think what's really interesting and important about COVID is that it's drawn into sharp relief the fact that a housing crisis is a community problem and not just an individual problem.
Welcome back to City Road Podcast. Last time on part one of our two-part series on renting during COVID-19, my colleague Ursula and I explored the negative effects on social housing tenants and vulnerable demographics. This week, we'll be diving into some of the housing policy behind the scenes, as well as chatting to the New South Wales Tenants Union on their experience dealing with renters during the crisis. And towards the end, we'll be chatting to a few renters who had varying experiences negotiating rents with their landlords. But yeah, let's just dive right in.
After speaking to Catherine and Henry, we decided that we need to look a little bit more into policy, particularly policy around renting in COVID. And so we spoke to Dr. Chris Martin from UNSW, who has a background in both law and housing and public housing and tenancy law in particular. And it was really interesting speaking to Chris because he spoke about how archaic our thinking is around renting and that when the pandemic first hit, the response was, well, how will people pay their rent? As opposed to, should people continue paying their rent?
Yeah, definitely. And he spoke quite a lot about how it's not only the policy changes since COVID-19 that's been important to note, but also the pre-existing housing and rental policies that have underpinned our system for a long time.
People have to pay their rent.
Well, there is another sort of response. Maybe they don't have to pay quite so much rent. But we haven't really forced that line. There's been some voluntary individual level negotiation around it that has been facilitated by state governments. And I think lots of other commentators too have balked at saying the rent must be reduced.
Why?
I think part of it is the flow of money through households. And it was interesting, early in the crisis, the real estate, you can go back and you can see this in some of the statements of the real estate institutes. They were expressly talking about the flow of money. They were really worried about the flow of, there's this flow of money from households to landlord households. And of course, there's a little diversion in the flow of money that goes to real estate agents as well. So that's why they were freaking out. And they were talking quite expressly about, we need to keep this flow of money happening, because everything turns on it. This flow of money, rent money, from households to landlords. And I guess the concern is that it also flows out of landlord households to banks in particular. $45 billion goes from private rental households every year to landlord households in rent, $45 billion. And there's, I think it's about $3 billion goes to real estate agents to do their thing. And then $20 billion goes to banks in interest payments, because about 80% of Australian landlords have debt finance, their investment, and 60% of Australian landlords are negatively geared. That is, that their interest outgoing is actually more than what's coming in. That flow of money and the institutions that are receiving all of the flow of rental money from households includes some powerful institutions, whether they're landlord households who are on average much higher income, who do have political power of their own. There's a lobby of property interests around them, in particular real estate agents, who have their own interests but presume to speak on behalf of landlords who have the ear of government. And there's the next step in that flow of funds, which is to the banks, who have been having a very quiet crisis, has to be said, while the property sector was telling people to hit up their super and pretty much doing this nude streak across the public consciousness in those early days of the moratorium, the banks have been very quiet. But I think to answer your question, that's why it's a lot of money, and it eventually flows to some powerful institutions.
As it is now, it looks like the tenants are kind of bearing the brunt of the crisis. Who do you think should be bearing the brunt of the economic crisis?
Well, there is a real cost to the crisis, and it needs to be shared equitably. And my concern is that tenants are bearing too much of it, or more precisely, our system was set up, the way our system was operating meant that tenants were going to bear it because rents weren't going to go down without some intervention. And there hasn't been enough intervention in allowing that cost to be shared further down that income stream to landlords and then to banks. So I do think tenants have had to absorb more of the cost than they should have had to. And I think that there may be a combination of ways of ultimately equitably sharing the cost. And that involves cutting off that, at least some part of that income stream out of households. And then there will be an issue about taxing away some of the gains that some households may have made in this. Some of those income streamers accumulated in savings in some households, then there should be a way of adjusting, sharing the cost by taxing that out as well.
So on the topic of policy, we headed down to the Tenants Union of New South Wales building in central Sydney to chat to Leo, the CEO, as well as Jemima, the Policy and Advocacy Coordinator, about some of the key issues they'd identified with tenants.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. So I'm Sam, by the way. Nice to meet you.
I'm Jemima. Nice to meet you too. Welcome to the Tenants Union.
So I'm Leo Patterson-Ross, I'm the CEO of the Tenants Union of New South Wales. As CEO of the Tenants Union of New South Wales, I'm responsible for ensuring that the TU fulfils its mission to improve the lives of tenants in New South Wales. The key issues that have arisen for tenants during COVID-19 has been the difficulty in feeling confident that they can comply with various safety and health orders, like staying at home and having a safe, secure home to remain in, and the financial impact of the sort of economic side of the of COVID-19. People have lost work. They have not been able to maintain the rents that they were paying before, which may already have been high and unaffordable, and we know many people have fallen further and further into debt. By March, obviously, the pandemic had spread further and further and it was impacting more and more people. And so we started recognising the risk of widespread evictions. And so we were advocating for an eviction moratorium that essentially stopped all evictions, because whether or not you have breached your contract by failing to pay rent or in some other way, if you're evicted from your home, you become much more vulnerable and much more unable to follow the health directives. So we really were saying that all evictions should be paused, and that the potential for debts should be addressed in policy early on. What we got was mostly a framework that tried to encourage a negotiation around rents, particularly in New South Wales. For 2 months, it stopped some evictions that were rent arrears if you were defined as COVID impacted, and that definition was 25% of household income had reduced. So for 2 months, those households couldn't be evicted for rent arrears. That was until mid-June. Since then, it has just been encouraging landlords to negotiate by saying you can't move to evict for rent arrears unless you can convince the tribunal both that you've engaged in a good faith negotiation and that in the circumstances, considering the financial position of the part of the landlord and tenant and the health sort of directives at the time, it's appropriate to evict the household. The other thing, though, we really saw was there is no obligation on the landlord to negotiate. It's only if you want to evict, you have to show that you've negotiated. And so that meant that a lot of people where the landlord decided they weren't going to move to eviction had no real path to have their rent reduced.
In a nutshell, how effective do you think that whole rent reduction process has been as well? I mean, obviously we've seen reports from like The Guardian and whatnot that have like talked about how very few tenants are actually getting like what they consider a satisfactory response from their landlords. And how do you think that it's ultimately been gone about?
In New South Wales, it really seems like it hasn't been very effective at all. We know that the vast majority of agreements were made informally and outside the sort of the government set process. And so often they were set for very short timeframes, or they were unclear about how long it was going to last, or unclear on the details of the agreement. So some people might have thought that it was a rent waiver where they weren't going to have to pay it back, but the landlord says, actually, no, you are going to have to pay me back. And so they hadn't defined the terms. Or they'd set it only for a month or two, and obviously the crisis has lasted for a lot longer, and so they're kind of either constantly having to try and renegotiate, or the relief only lasted for a little period, and they may, you know, be kind of struggling as a result.
I'm Jemima Mowbray. I'm the Policy and Advocacy Coordinator at the Tenants Union New South Wales.
When we spoke briefly the other day, you were talking about some of the more vulnerable groups that have arisen with COVID and renting during COVID-19. One of the ones you mentioned were people living in share houses. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that a little bit and explain why people in share houses have been experiencing more challenges than others?
I'm going to clarify a little bit. I think that if you're a renter, you have been challenged during this time. If you've been impacted financially, you've been challenged. And, you know, across the board, there's just a whole lot of different vulnerabilities. Share housing has had some really particular kinds of issues come up. You know, what we saw in share houses was that there might only be one or two people in the household who actually lost income, but it would have an impact across, you know, everyone in terms of the rent that they all had to pay. Because if a couple of people can't put in the rent, how do you make up that difference? But they didn't get any of the protections that the evictions moratorium brought in New South Wales, because the definition there said, you know, 25% of your income as a renting household has to have been lost. So you could have a situation where two people lost 100% of their income. They then made a really probably smart and sensible decision, and the only decision that they could make, which was, we're going to move out and we're going to go stay with family. Or, but then the two people who are left in the house couldn't fill the room. It's been a really hard time in share housing to fill a vacant room. They might not have had any loss of income, but they didn't get any protection because they're not able to show that they've had a drop in income. But they can't cover that rent. They were already paying way too much money out before COVID. And post-COVID, it's just become even trickier. And so a lot of tenants felt like they didn't have much choice, and that the most sensible decision was that they had to leave straight away. And we saw that. We saw tenants who actually were in fixed terms and who were facing penalties, especially at the time. There have been some changes, which for some tenants, they get a little bit of a get out if they're not, if their landlord isn't coming to the table to negotiate. They can leave without such a significant penalty. But early on, especially, you saw a lot of tenants leaving with quite significant penalties. So 4 or 6 weeks of rent, because they were breaking their lease early, they'd have to pay this break fee. But they waited up and went, you know what, I just don't know that I'm going to be able to negotiate a rent reduction that will actually be low enough that I can stay and afford to stay in this home. So if they had any kind of alternative accommodation, if they could go stay with friends or family, or find something potentially that was, you know, not as high quality or further out, then they might move straight away. And we saw that happen quite a lot, because people just didn't have confidence in the negotiating framework, or the idea that the landlord was actually going to reduce rents enough. And then, you know, my colleague Leo has talked quite a bit about the fact that the other problems in the mix of that rent reduction framework were that you were seeing a whole lot of deferrals put on the table. Often that was actually kind of, you know, you could see that the landlord was maybe trying to, or probably trying to do the right thing. They would say, or the real estate agent would say to their tenant, you know, just, you know, pay what you can and we'll work it out. They wanted to do the right thing. They didn't want to see their tenants out in the middle of, especially early on when we're all really anxious about this. They didn't want to force their tenants out into the community, evict them right in the middle of a pandemic. So they would say, just pay what you can and we'll work it all out later. And from their perspective, they were saying to their they were doing exactly what the New South Wales government and other governments had said to do. You know, just try and do the right thing by your tenant. We need everybody to work together. But from the tenant's point of view, what they heard and what they knew was going on there was essentially a deferral, but with no negotiation around it. You know, no ability to say, well, is that going to be a waiver? So is it actually going to be a real reduction? Or are you just telling me to put it off and I'll have to pay you back later? I don't know if I'll have a job later. I don't know if my financial situation is going to turn around. So how can I agree to that? And so people had to leave.
We then decided to speak to some fellow renters who approached their landlords about getting a rent reduction. The first person was Sammy, who lives in Inner West Sydney with his two sisters.
Well, I live with my two older sisters and... one of them lost their job from COVID, so she couldn't work. So there was less income coming in, and there was a period of uncertainty where, before JobKeeper came in, my shifts went way down, but JobKeeper hadn't kicked in yet, so I didn't know how much money I was going to be getting. So, and then we just heard that everyone was getting rent reductions, so we just jumped in on the action.
And how did that process go? Can you walk me through how you negotiated that rent reduction?
Yeah, so I remember at the beginning, our real estate agents weren't keen to do it at all. They weren't going to do it. They were just like, nah. But then we were like, oh, come on, everyone's doing it. And then I think we just sent a couple emails, did a bit of red tape. There was some, you know, paperwork we had to fill out, like proving how much our income had been reduced, I'm pretty sure is what we had to do. And then after that, I think they reduced it by like $50 or something.
So how much was your rent originally, and then what was it after the rent reduction?
Originally it was $900 a week for the three of us, so $300 each, but then it went down to $850.
That's not a very big reduction.
Yeah, nah, it's not. But that was the thing. They were pretty hard. They were a bit hard-assed about it, so we were happy to just get that because, you know, that builds up over time.
Unfortunately, some renters haven't been so lucky, and I spoke to one renter, Ella, who had quite a big issue when trying to negotiate with their landlords.
So our rental experience during COVID was actually fairly non-existent up until a certain point. And then essentially, for just a little bit of background information, when we moved into our house, we actually got it for a tiny little bit less than what they had advertised it for. I think it was maybe about $70 or something less. So essentially, the owner of our house had always wanted to raise the rent on us. And then they talked about that in February, and we said that we were happy for them to raise the rent because, as far as we were concerned, we'd been getting a cheap house, in inverted commas. And then COVID hit, so we sent an email to the real estate saying we're fine with the rent increase, but is there any way that we can put that off until the lockdown is over? But unfortunately, that's not what happened. So we inevitably spent a good month or two emailing back and forth about this rent increase that they wanted to put on us. We then turned around to them and stated that we weren't asking for a decrease in our rent. We weren't asking to not pay our rent at all. We hadn't asked for any COVID-related favours. So for them to turn around and say that they wanted a rent increase was, if I'm going to describe it as anything, it was incredibly insulting. Especially when we did what we felt like was the right thing. We didn't ask them for anything, we didn't bother them, et cetera, et cetera. So they've told us that they want to raise our rent, like I said, in the middle of a pandemic. And we've tried to work with them, like I said, asking them to put it off. They declined. They offered a certain amount, and then we turned around and offered them half of that.
Were you or anyone else in your house affected by COVID-19 in any ways, or was it essentially business as usual for you otherwise?
Well, look, to be fair, I don't know many people that it was just business as usual. Even with people working their jobs, they're still working from home. So we live with a young lady who manages for Opera Bar. So essentially she has not had any work for the last 6 months. They've done Job Seeker, with her. And then our other flatmate, he had a couple of hours knocked down. And then personally, I work in hospitality, so my hours were cut down as well. So long story short, we were all affected in one way or another. It's not like it was smooth sailing at home and the rental people were like, oh, they can afford it. You know, we can't afford it. So essentially we have copped a rent increase in the middle of a COVID pandemic. But there was a little bit of how come we're not shown, I guess, the same respect that everyone else has shown. But that is the rental market for you in Sydney in a nutshell. It's incredibly difficult, even when it's being, I guess, regulated as it was over COVID. It still doesn't mean that, you know, it's fair for everybody, unfortunately. So, yeah, we were very disappointed.
We then spoke to Katie, who has actually had a pretty positive experience negotiating her rent with her landlord.
I had two jobs before COVID. I was working in a pub down the road from me, and I was also sport coaching at Skeggs Darlinghurst. One of my housemates was doing the exact same thing at me. She was coaching at a different school, and she was working at the same pub as me, and my other housemate was a nanny.
And what happened once COVID hit?
So Skeggs shut down because they had, I think they had a close contact case or something. So my coaching job ended quite suddenly. And the pub was like staying open until they couldn't possibly stay open any longer. So I essentially lost my job. And then Skeggs said that the sporting season was cancelled and they wouldn't be starting up till term four. So there was a period where I wasn't going to have a job for 4 or 5 months. All three of us ended up unemployed and without any form of JobKeeper because none of us had been in our jobs for over a year because we'd all just moved into a new area. And so we all decided to go home to be with our families and to quarantine with them.
And then what happened with your rent? How did you approach that?
So we'd been home for about a month and a half and we knew that there wasn't really an end in sight. And so we knew that we were going to be home for quite a lot longer. And we paid quite a lot of rent and to live in the area that we live in, and we were quite stressed about paying it when we weren't even there. We have a really lovely property agent who he manages the property. The owner lives overseas, so he does kind of all the management for it. So we were just like, there's no harm in sending him an email and just seeing what could happen. So we sent him an email saying, is there any possibility our rent could be deducted? We've all lost our jobs, we've all moved home, etc. Just like put it out there, and he got back to us and he was like, yep, that's so fine, how does 50% deduction sound?
Wow. 50%.
Yeah, so we were like, yeah, that sounds awesome. And so we've been paying 50% rent since March of this year.
And what is going to happen? So you've got a job again now. Do your other housemates have their jobs back?
Yes. So my other housemate got her coaching job back and my other housemate picked up some more nannying work as well. And so, yeah, we're all employed again, which is nice. But it also is like we haven't had income for 4 months. So we're kind of rebuilding our savings at the moment as well. So it's nice that we're still paying that 50% rent. So we're not dealing with having to go back to an insane amount of rent without any savings.
And what's going to happen now? Have they spoken to you about increasing the rent back up to 100%?
So it's quite a funny story, actually, and it goes back to a plumbing problem we had. So we had a major plumbing problem in our laundry and we didn't say anything about it because we were like, oh, if we say something, he'll come over and then he'll see that we're back and he'll put the rent back up, even though we know full well that this is a really nice guy. And so we put it off. And then the floor started swelling downstairs from this leak. And we're like, maybe it's time we call him and get him to call a plumber. Anyway, long story short, plumber comes over and was like, you idiots, why did you leave this leak going on for so long? And we're like, oh, we just didn't notice it. And when our property agent came over to look at it, he was like, oh, and just so you know, rent will probably stay down for the remainder of the year. And so we assume it will go back to its normal rent in the following year, which we intend to stay for another year in this place. I think it's just really nice how during COVID you've been able to really put to the test people's humanity and see how understanding some people are. I know we are in a very incredibly lucky situation to be in the situation we're in, but we're just so thankful to have such a lovely property agent who just saw our situation and saw how tough it was and just instantly was just kind over anything else. I think that's just been a really lovely thing about COVID. In amongst all the horror is that you've been able to see people's kinder sides.
I think it was really interesting over the last 12 weeks speaking to all of these academics and fellow tenants and the tenants union as well, and looking at so many of these issues that I haven't really given much thought to previously, even though I probably should have.
Yeah, I think you and I were both very unfamiliar with a lot of these issues, despite being private renters ourselves. And I think it's been really important familiarising ourselves with the landscape.
Yeah, and I think it was particularly interesting looking at, especially at policy, speaking to Chris, especially at the start of the pandemic, that our focus was on How do we keep people paying their rent, and how do we keep that flow of money going from tenants through to landlords and eventually through to banks, as opposed to just how do we keep people in their homes?
Yeah, for sure. And I think public housing and the importance of communities such as the Estates in Waterloo really stuck out to me as well, because it's so important to protect people in those low-income brackets from not only crises such as COVID, but also from issues such as homelessness, which just keep on rising in our cities.
Yeah, and I think secure housing, what we realise perhaps, is that secure housing is the first line of defence for COVID-19, and we are so dependent on secure housing.
Yeah, and COVID-19 has been a time when we've all had to come together to protect our communities. And I think it is that once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to come together and address the pre-existing issues that underpin our rental market, so that when we do have another crisis such as this, our first priority is keeping Australians in their homes and making sure they feel safe and secure in what have been already incredibly fearful times. I'm Sam Dover. You've been listening to City Road, produced out of the 2SER studios in Sydney and coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. See you next time.